I think that's what happens when the trolley from the land, from Mr. Rogers' living room, is making its way into the land of make-believe, and there's some sort of transit problem. I think that's the music that they would use to do that. That's what it sounded like. All of a sudden, it was very, we're going into the land, and then there was... Then there was some sort of track problem.
Uh-oh.
I don't know quite what that was.
Hang on,
but it
Mr.
was good.
Rogers.
It's actually very cool music. It's Julius Rodriguez playing at the Hudson Jazz Festival in Hudson, New York. The festival runs the 3rd through the 5th, and you can find out more by going to hudsonhall.org, hudsonhall.org. Playline, no, that's something else. Playlist posted online at wamc.org/roundtable. Good morning, all. Welcome to this installment of the Roundtable panel and of the Roundtable on this Monday, the 22nd of September. It's 31 minutes past 9 o'clock. We hope you had a lovely weekend and a good one. It was beautiful weather for most of us, I think, and hopefully you just enjoyed it and had a great, great time. We have a wonderful panel with us, and let me introduce at least the members that are here to you. we'll hope something else shows up. We'll see how that goes. Terry Gibson is with us, preceptor in public speaking, strategic communications, and public relations for the Faculty of Arts and Sciences at Harvard University. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
I'm very good. Happy to be here.
We're happy you're here. How are things? I was not quite your way. I was in the Cape this weekend, but it was a beautiful weekend on the Cape, so I assume it was a beautiful weekend in Boston.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. So you drove right past me and didn't even stop to say hi.
That's absolutely right. I will tell you that I was traveling with my mother-in-law, so you're probably better off.
Is she listening right now? Are you in trouble?
I've been in trouble all weekend, Anna. but it was lovely. It was just great. But I would think, did you get out and do cool stuff?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was a beautiful weekend. Lots of outdoor activities. Really, really nice to enjoy these final days of summer. And I hope you enjoyed the Cape.
Yes, I did. I'm amused by when people say like your final days of summer, and you're like, or just final days.
After today's show, we might feel like it's final days.
The final days. Well, Terry, it's always good to have you here. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Anna Markowitz joins us, Executive Director of Communities for Local Power and former White House Advance Lead. Good morning. Good morning, Anna. How are you?
I'm doing great. I also enjoyed some beautiful weather this weekend, which is good because it's supposed to rain a bunch this week, but that is needed. It hasn't rained in way too long. I haven't mowed my grass since I can remember, so I'm glad for it, I guess.
Well, it's hard. It's hard because you, like with the mow the grass, you know, it's, I don't know about yours. Ours is so dead. There's so little rain that it makes it very difficult to, mow it because you're just further killing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I haven't mowed in like a month. I don't know. I kind of like the reprieve, but this too shall end.
I think I went to the Cape and all I got was this cold.
Oh, no, not even a lobster roll?
No, I got a lobster roll.
Okay,
too,
okay, good.
I got this cold. So I apologize for being at a lower decibel than I normally am. I have two quick announcements, and then we'll get started on the show. First of all, the coolest thing I did all weekend is I went to go see David Byrne at Proctor's Theater last night, and he has a new album out called Who Is the Sky?
Ooh.
And it's with the Ghost Train Orchestra, and it was... And sometimes when you go see something, you don't it eclipses a lot of other things. Mm. This, I think, singularly was one of the best concert experiences I've ever had, and I have to think and cogitate on it for a little while. It may be the best concert experience I've ever had.
Oh.
It was phenomenal. A Talking Heads fan, Terry.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm listening very closely.
Okay.
I know. So, I love the Talking Heads. I haven't
So they
seen
come
just
in,
him,
like,
though.
Starts with Heaven, and then he just went right in to the new song off the album called Everybody Laughs, which is fantastic and very happy and very upbeat, and then goes into And She Was, and it was just phenomenal. The whole thing was phenomenal. He hasn't performed Psycho Killer in 20 years. On stage.
Wow.
He did it last night. And it was just amazing. Absolutely amazing. The choreography, the people who are all untethered musicians as they march around the grand stage at Proctor's, which not only is the most beautiful place to see a show, but to see that kind of show, oh my God.
All right, I'm going to have to listen to that on the car ride home.
It was great, great stuff. And congratulations to everyone who had anything to do with it, because it was just phenomenal. And I don't think I've ever seen Terry, I think maybe 2016. I haven't seen that many happy people.
I hope you really soaked it in. You won't see them again for a while.
Yeah, no, it was really, really cool. It was really, really cool. And he's amazing, 73 years old. I had seen him a couple times on Broadway with American Utopia, and I love that show. But this, my God, just fantastic. Great, great stuff. He did a gospel rendition of one of my favorite songs, which is, you wouldn't think that Everybody's Coming to My House should be a gospel song, but it was, and it was blisteringly beautiful, just absolutely beautiful. So I just want to a shout out to that. That was one of the most fun experiences. I also learned there's a lot of WAMC people who like David Byrne. Okay. The second thing I have to mention is also, I think, somewhat equal excitement. If you know the author Ken Follett is the author of Pillars of the Earth, the number one New York Times bestseller. He writes huge books about huge subjects, and he wrote Eye of the Needle. And he has so many novels to his credit. He's doing a book tour, only three spots in the United States that he's stopping. He's doing a thing tonight in Philly at the Free Library of Philadelphia, which is also a beautiful venue, the Brooklyn Public Library tomorrow night, and then on Wednesday night, he will be at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie. And I will be interviewing him for the book show on the 24th at the Bardavon. Ken Follett, Circle of Days, is the new book. It's about Stonehenge. And I know this is going to sound like a complaint, and it really isn't. But the book's like 1,000 pages.
It looks like it could kill some big spiders.
Yeah, it definitely. That's right. We don't really start building Stonehenge till around the 600th page. So there's a lot of backstory. But it's really good. And it's called Circle of Days. And if you go to bardavon.org, bardavon.org, you can find out information about how you can join us and be with us as we take this journey with the one and only Ken Follett. So only doing three stops, one of them in our backyard, and lucky enough to be a part of that. So thank you very much. All right, let's get to the show. I think we're waiting for one more panelist, but they're not here. So you two may have to cover
the show.
Oh, geez,
buckle up, Terry. We're on.
I think you're on. You're going to do this.
Well, can't you just keep telling us about all the exciting things you're
doing? No,
have you seen other concerts recently?
I've run out of stuff, but I'll start showing you. I'll start showing slides later if that's a big hit. All right, let's talk about, I think once the three of us get going on free speech, we'll probably fill out the rest of the show. I'm not too worried. Mm-hmm. I'm not too worried about that. So let us talk here. It's been a weekend and a lot going on, and certainly things that I think are of interest. One is the fact of the assault on free speech, which we've been talking about a lot on the program. Yesterday was the memorial service for Charlie Kirk, the funeral service. And that, of course, touched on many of these issues. But over the weekend, we saw a couple of things happening. One is the president of the United States, Donald Trump, continued to complain about negative coverage about him that undermines, that he says, undermines democracy. He feels that anything that is against how what he believes in should be silenced is pretty much at this point what he is saying. Now, a lot of his officials within his administration are trying to massage that a little bit so it doesn't sound quite as drastic as it may be. But the actions are still fairly drastic. So as President Trump threatens a wide-ranging crackdown on mainstream media institutions and political opponents, his aides and allies have cast the administration's moves as critical to stanching misinformation and hate speech that could lead to political violence. But Mr. Trump himself has repeatedly made clear in recent days that he has a different goal. For him, it's not about hate speech, but about speech that he hates, namely speech that is critical of him and his administration. He has suggested that a clutch of protesters who yelled at him in a restaurant, he be prosecuted under laws targeting mobsters. This was the steak dinner that he had downtown in Washington to show how safe it was once they had the crackdown in D.C. So he goes out and then people yelled at him because they don't like him. And so now he wants them to be prosecuted under these laws. He demanded that multiple late-night comics who mocked him be taken off the air. Stephen Colbert's show has been canceled. That show will leave the airwaves as of May. And then last week, of course, the story about Jimmy Kimmel and his show on ABC. And that show has been pulled indefinitely, and we're still waiting to hear what the future of that program is. He threatened to shutter television broadcasters that he deemed unfair to him. He sued the New York Times for allegedly damaging his reputation. And that was just last week. When threatening government action against those who anger him, Mr. Trump can be strikingly transparent about what is driving him. And veering from the article here just for a second, the idea of this being strikingly transparent, when Colbert went off the air, he said, Colbert is gone, Kimmel is next. And, you know, that's... it's pretty transparent.
Yeah, and he followed through. Okay.
Followed through. He talks regularly about how journalists, commentators, and political actors should not be, quote, allowed to be so harsh toward him, having installed a partisan ally to run the FBI. He muses openly about which political critics he would like to have investigated. Mr. Trump is not the only president to bristle at opposition or news coverage, nor the first to try to punish those who angered him. But in modern times, no president has gone so far in using his power to pressure media figures and political opponents, according to historians. At the end of a week dominated by a fraught national debate over free speech that followed the assassination of the conservative activist Charlie Kirk, Mr. Trump summed up his view on Friday in a remark that would have been shocking if made by any previous president. Quote, they'll take a great story and they'll make it bad, he told reporters in the Oval Office, referring to the network newscasts. See, I think that's really illegal. The president's outbursts undermine the rationales offered by his own officials, Attorney General Pam Bondi, who initially claimed she had the right to investigate businesses that refused to print memorial vigil posters for Mr. Kirk, later emphasized that the government is focused on hate speech that crosses the line into threats of violence. Brendan Carr, the chairman of the FCC, has argued that many broadcasters have a liberal bias and do not meet the agency's standard for serving the public interest. With that, Anna Markowitz.
Yeah. I think we're at a really scary and unprecedented time. I think that the FCC using its leverage very blatantly saying we're going to withhold, licenses if you don't listen to us and take off air people who we don't like is terrifying. That really is restricting free speech. And I think that having ABC listen to them and take Jimmy Kimmel off the air is setting a bad example. Who else is next? I mean, Trump has tweeted himself that he thinks that Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers should be next. Oh, no. Who am I going to listen to at night for all my funny commentary? This is how my children learn about the news is through these guys. So it's scary. And then I think it's all kind of tied back. They're using this Charlie Kirk assassination as a cover to attack free speech. And I listened to the memorial service. Yes. And it got more and more blatant that this they are attacking us. They must be stopped. What did Trump call it? Like the left lunatics. It must be stopped. I mean, it really feels like this is a moment that they're trying to use to really crack down on free speech. And I really hope that it dies down and that it doesn't turn in the direction it seems to be turning, but it's terrifying.
Terry Gibson.
Well, so many different directions to go with this. Obviously, there couldn't be anything more counter to the whole concept of democracy. I can't think of anything more democratic than the freedom to be able to criticize the president of your country. So it's just amazing to me that we continue to see literally no one of any authority in the Republican Party stand up and speak really directly against this kind of what is truly an authoritarian leaning to want to take over any form of communication that would be counter to Donald Trump's narrative. I don't expect that he is going to change. I only expect that he's going to get worse. But if someone in his sphere does not eventually stand up to him, then I'm just not sure where this goes. The other part of it is that what he's trying to achieve, it's amazing how much he's achieving without even really having to do anything other than make these threats. In other words, we're just seeing these large media conglomerates just cater to what he wants. They just collapse without even a willingness to go to court to fight for it. They don't even want to stand up. They would rather just say, okay, fine, we don't want to have to deal with this, or we'll just take it off the air. So much of what we're seeing those do that are fearful of Trump, they're doing with threats that really probably would not stand up in court if they were to actually go to court and fight for it. So there is that sort of profit-driven corporate aspect of this that is playing into it as well. And the other part of it is that no matter how hard he tries to do this, there's a certain level of it that's just kind of impossible. He's a person that's sort of stuck in a 1980s mode of living where he still relies heavily, I think probably exclusively almost on cable TV and specifically Fox News for whatever it is he watches. And more and more and more, Americans are severing their connection to cable television. If my students are any indication of this, they're only vaguely aware that some of these things like Jimmy Kimmel and the other talk show host are being canceled because they're not spending much time watching those shows. They're on TikTok, and which we could talk about is a whole other thing, and other platforms on YouTube. They're watching all kinds of influencers. They're getting their information from hundreds of thousands of other sources, which could almost never be totally eliminated by Donald Trump, no matter how hard he works at this. So it's a complicated thing that is yes, definitely terrifying. Not sure where we're going to end up.
One comment that the president made I'd like to read, and then we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll continue this conversation. We welcome your letters, by the way, panel at WAMC.org. We always welcome your letters. Today is no exception. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. At the service yesterday for Charlie Kirk, Mr. Trump said that he learned, said that many things that provoked, let me get this quote right. Here we go. Mr. Kirk said many things that provoked a backlash, but Mr. Trump said that Mr. Kirk had valued debate and, quote, did not hate his opponents. And that, Mr. Trump said, is where he and Mr. Kirk differed. I hate my opponents, Mr. Trump said, standing behind protective glass on stage, and I don't want the best for them. We'll take a break. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this. Good morning, all. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. It's the 22nd of September, and we thank you very much for being with us. And very nice to have you on the have you with us and have you here on the program. We were talking about what happened last week in the discussions, so much that have taken place over free speech. Terry, you brought up something that I think is worth talking about here in these moments before we go to a break at the top of the hour, and that is the role of social media. So many people, especially your students, for example, not getting their news from traditional news sources. Of how social media plays into this, quite frankly, how social media played into the rise of Charlie Kirk, of how he was able to really galvanize young conservatives and young Republicans by using these platforms that were at his disposal. And it is fascinating of how they are used. And also, I think equally fascinating is sort of the shelf life of all of that.
Yeah, it is. And it's also interesting how the current precedent is that government relies on these big corporations that control these social media outlets to really regulate themselves, to take responsibility for what they might deem as hate speech based on the regulations. You're not really seeing the government step in and take any substantial action to hold these corporations accountable for what they're doing. We've seen some efforts to do that. I'm not aware of any that have successfully really prevailed to date in this country. Other countries have taken more urgent measures than we have. And this story about the TikTok new ownership is really interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that changes the dynamic, if it changes at all.
And that's a story that's really been going on for more than a year of the ownership of TikTok, and the president's involvement in that is I think very clear as to, well, I don't know how clear it is, but it's certainly very interesting to see what the connections are. And also how closely connected the president has become with so many of these deals dealing with major media and social media companies.
Yeah, and I think it's important to really remember, and I remind my students of this all the time, these social media platforms that we rely so heavily on, they are purely profit-driven mediums. Period. There is no other purpose for them. And they are going to make changes, place regulations in place, do whatever they need to do in terms of providing content and changing algorithms to continue to make that profit. You know, it's really important that we not lose sight of that. And hey, just to put a plug in for public radio, it's why public radio is so important, because it's one of the only exceptions to that profit-driven rule. And that's why everyone should contribute to WAMC.
1-800-323-9262 to help out in that regard, and WAMC.org. Thank you, Terry. We do have letters on this I'd like to get to. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
Oh, no. I mean, I personally, as the mom of a 10 and 13-year-old who every day, like as they're watching YouTube shorts or people are just screaming at each other extremely fast and then moving on to the next short, I just can't imagine the impact that this has on everybody's brains and the ADD that it's causing. And it shocks me on a daily basis that the government isn't regulating this in more capacity than they are. And I think that there's a lot of different aspects in which it's troublesome, not only just like the brain structure of our youth and the mental health issues of our youth, but then also the free speech aspect too. And I just think that as a country, we really haven't wrapped our arms around this. And I would love to see us do that, but maybe not this president or this Congress. So I don't know. I'm torn.
We have letters. Let's go to Vincent, who said, I worked for a number of Democratic leaders who almost, to a person, railed against negative press coverage. And I, at the risk of losing my job, had to constantly remind them that it wasn't the press's job to love them. It was their job to hold them accountable. That from Vincent. Then Anne. Anne has a great letter, I think, because I feel the same way. Anne says, I've never felt so rattled, unsure, and frankly scared in my whole life. I would really love to know what you all think this is going to go. Everybody talks about the lead stories, but not too many people are saying what they're fearing the most and what they believe is going to happen. I refuse to give up hope, but I feel like the conversation could go in so many different directions. Revolution? Question mark. Well, I think that's the fact, and this is where I agree, that it is rattling. And the last week was really rattling. I mean, especially since, you know, I mean, because of the personal things of, you know, we've talked about this. If they decide they don't like what we're saying, they can pull a license. You know, it's not. And now they're doing it or threatening it, and it is difficult to put that into any sort of concept that makes sense.
And I think that it's how all of these stories tie together, right? It's not just one thing that they're going after; it's all of them. They're attacking the free speech with the FCC licenses and the press, you know, control. They are trying to, oh gosh, where was I going to go with this? The Justice Department. They are attacking people who don't agree with them or who aren't attacking their foes. They are attacking the education system and getting rid of the Department of Education. They're kind of doing everything that they said that they would do in Project 2025. It's happening, and it's a coordinated effort. And I think that this, if we don't have enough checks and balances to actually stop these things, which I'm surprised on a daily basis by how quickly people are crumbling, this could lead to bad outcomes.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, and we'll continue with your letters, and we'll also continue this conversation. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. First, we'll take a break and then go to David and Sarah for a lockbox update right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Thanks to Sarah and David for their great work in the lockbox central room and for helping us get shaving off as much as we can before the fund drive begins on October 6th. Continue to help, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. And thanks to all of you who have already done something. We so appreciate it. Terry Gibson is here, preceptor in public speaking, strategic communications, and public relations for the Faculty of Arts and Sciences at Harvard University, and executive director of Communities for Local Power and former White House advance lead Anna Markowitz. Thank you both for being here. We're talking about free speech. We're talking about events that took place over the weekend, including the memorial service for Charlie Kirk, where the president once again said that he was most interested in trying to silence those who speak out against him. We do have a number of letters, and I'd like to get to those. Panelists, please feel free to jump in at any point and offer your comments on what our listeners have to say. Leslie writes, FYI, Jimmy Kimmel has over 20 million subscribers on YouTube, so his reach is not just on network television. That is absolutely true. Butch says, well, now we got to see a new phenomenon in America, a state funeral of a political martyr with the president as master of ceremonies. These kind of things happened in Nazi Germany and Stalin's Soviet Russia. What next? I dread to think. That from Butch. We go to Chris. It's way past time for civil action. With the preeminent right of a democracy in such obvious peril, why are people still sitting at home? There is time to plan for a major march and demonstration on America's most important and symbolic public event, the 2026 Super Bowl. The whole world watches, and the complicit media makes huge profits on this day. Let's organize in support of free speech now. Time is running out. That from Chris. I don't know. Was that Chris's idea, or is that something that has been burbling around there about the Super Bowl?
This is my first time hearing about that.
I'll have to figure that one out. All right. We go to Michelle. I have been participating in weekly protest in Salem, New York. Go Washington County, says Joe. since February, we are committed but also respectful. This Saturday, we were visited by a dinosaur-clad citizen. I'm extremely proud of my protesters in my community. It's just, as a Washington County resident, it is good to see from both sides of people who are peacefully protesting and having their voices heard and making a difference, and that sort of being the spot. And it is, you know, you think of the public square, and that really, you can see it there, and that's very cool. We go to Peggy. How can the president of the United States make a statement that he hates those people and the quote you read is one of the worst I've ever heard? It is anti-Christian. It is anti-any religion. I'm shocked yet not surprised that he said this out loud to a crowd of supporters of Kirk's. He speaks with forked tongue to proclaim freedom of speech and then want to prosecute anyone who speaks negatively against him. This is beyond absurd.
Yeah, I mean, that quote is really troubling. And I mean, it really makes me feel like we should be bracing for the worst, because how can you say that out loud to a full football stadium plus overflow plus people being, you know, not even allowed? I mean, we're talking close to 100,000 people that right. were at this event, plus whoever was listening in. That's a statement, and we're getting really close to what feels like civil war type of rhetoric. I don't know. I really hope.
Well, and certainly the us versus them, right?
Yeah. It's
that the lines, the battle lines are being
over and over
identified.
Again. They were just saying us versus them, you know, that, you know, the evil still walks among us and it's them, you know, and that is scary speech to be hearing.
John writes to us and says, I'm so fed up with this. I am so fed up with this lie that there is a liberal bias to the news media. The so-called liberal media has refused to repeat what Charlie Kirk, blessed be his name, said about gay men like me. So I will. He called for me to be bludgeoned to death with stones. How is that not hating your opponents? And that letter from John. Jim said, certainly the Biden administration was no stranger to attacking what it said was misinformation, giving birth to the fact-checking industry. The rationales for those campaigns were at least rational, but for left-leaning free speech absolutists like myself, we have proven our point. If you create the power of government to censor, the power will be taken by would-be authoritarians, and the American experiment will be fatally injured. That from Jim. Any thoughts on that, Terry Gibson?
Oh, wow. This is all so dark that I'm just having trouble kind of finding the light in any of it, because it's these are all excellent letters, excellent observations. And I think it's important to acknowledge that we are in a really scary time. And the only way to really stop or curb any of this behavior is it's going to have to come from the people, because our elected officials clearly not either interested in doing it or they're not capable of doing it. Our courts are showing the same limitations, and the big corporate powers are completely playing along with this and seem to be willing to do whatever they need to do to protect the almighty dollar. And so the American people will at some point have to say, I'm not going to go along with this anymore. And it's unrealistic to think that all American people will do that. We just need a majority to do that. And I don't know what form that's going to come in. I have a hard time envisioning something that sort of falls into the category of civil war. I just feel like the demographics of our country and states are just so diverse that I find it hard to believe that there could be sort of a mass gathering enough in any one place for that to be successful. But at the same time, we've always looked for government to intervene in any type of conflict, any type of civil conflict. We've always looked for government to intervene. And if the federal government is the one that's going to be asked to intervene in something that looks like a civil war, well, I guess we know which side they're going to take. So that gets to be a little scary as well. So it's we are about to find out how much freedom of speech matters to us and how much we value it, because it's slipping away from us at a rapid pace. And even when it's not being taken away from us, people are engaging in silencing themselves because they're scared that they will somehow there will be retribution placed upon them. And there's lots of evidence out there to give people real fear of that.
We have two more letters I'd like to read and then move on to other topics. And don't worry, they're equally depressing. John said, I'm just wondering what Trump's staff and agency has are thinking. If Trump fails in setting up a totalitarian state, what do these people think is going to happen to them? Trump is in decline. MAGA will probably fade after he's gone, and some conservatives are already turning on his limiting the First Amendment. What will their charges be when the fever pitch is dulled? Treason? Obstructing justice? Crimes against the Constitution? They will be in jail the rest of their lives. Something odd happened in my house this weekend, where it was the first time I believe I've ever said, yeah, go Ted Cruz.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too.
How did that happen?
I know. I also read that article and was like, oh, we agree?
Wow.
Something?
Who knew? Yeah. Who knew? All right, let's go to.
Hang on, but before we do that, though, I remember seeing that statement too that he made, and which was about expressing, I guess, concern about the FCC, using its leverage to silence people. And yeah, I was really surprised by that as well. Mm-hmm. But to the previous letter writer's comments, that's some evidence that there are some conservatives that are willing to draw a line. But I'm not seeing a lot of hard evidence, and I'm not even convinced that Ted Cruz will ultimately really do anything about any of this. I mean, he has spoken up about things in the past, but it's one thing to speak up, but it's a whole other thing to really stay consistent and really take action to reinforce what you're speaking about. And I'm just not seeing any real conservative or any authority do that. And we could really use that. And I would think that there would be some of them out there smart enough to foresee the future, where that if they don't take these actions, their livelihood, their ability to sustain their own organizations could be a threat as well. Because when you start slicing and dicing free speech, anybody can be attacked for that, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. As long as we still have elections, and we're all beginning to wonder if that's in jeopardy, these conservative voices at some point will be at risk of losing their power. And you got to think that some of them are worried about that, but I'm just not seeing it yet. And it's getting disturbing, because we're getting very close to congressional elections. This is about the time of year that you would see a Republican candidate starting to really promote themselves as being the next presidential candidate for the Republican side. We're not really seeing anybody step out to do that. So that's all very troubling.
Maureen says, don't hear enough questions about Trump's mental health. His vituperation rants are unhinged, never mind authoritarian ambitions. He's apparently not well. That from Maureen. Let's go to some other stories making news this morning. And again, we welcome your comments, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So on this, very similarly, and I think this is, and certainly Terry, I'm interested in all your perspectives, but how this requires within the media. The Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, announced over the weekend that they are drastically changing the rules for journalists who cover the Department of Defense. This is according to two U.S. officials who spoke and confirmed this to NPR. The move drew sharp criticism from news organizations who say it violated the bedrock of a free press. Going forward, journalists must sign a pledge not to gather any information, including unclassified reports, that hasn't been authorized for release. Using the rebranded Department of War acronym, DOW, the 17-page document obtained by NPR outlining the new rules for the media say those who fail to obey the new policy will lose their press credentials, cutting off access to the headquarters of the largest department in the U.S. government. The DOW remains committed to transparency, to promote accountability and public trust, the document said. However, the information from the Department of War must be approved for public release by an appropriate authorizing official before it is released, even if it is unclassified. And while I get to the next paragraph, just think of the whole Signal controversy. Okay, here we go. According to the document, journalists who report on news outside of the explicit commands of the Pentagon could be deemed a security or safety risk and have their credits stripped. Writing about the shift, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth posted Friday on social media that the press does not run the Pentagon, the people do. Earlier this year, Hegseth announced new rules limiting reporters' ability to move freely through the Pentagon without approval and an escort, a change that broke years of tradition of both Democratic and Republican administrations. The press is no longer allowed to roam the halls of a secure facility, wear a badge and follow the rules or go home, Hegseth wrote in his Friday tweet. These new restrictions fall in line with the broader policy of the Trump administration to attempt to limit coverage from outlets who President Trump has deemed unfair. Hegseth's decision was quickly and sharply derided by members of the media and proponents of a free press who noted that pre-approval of reportable material would limit the ability of reporters to provide vital news to the public about America's military. We're going to pause there. I'll set it up. I'll use that as a tease. We're going to go over to our Lockbox Central, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about this very issue. Think of your thoughts as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this. 32 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Monday morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to the Roundtable panel. You can still help out the Lockbox, WAMC.org. Before we went to break, we set up this story talking about Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth announcing the requirement from the Pentagon to pledge that they will only report what is authorized for them to report. Journalists must sign this pledge not to gather any information, including unclassified reports, that have not been authorized for release. Using the Department of War acronym, the document obtained outlines the new rules for the media, saying those who fail to obey the new policy will lose their press credentials, cutting off access to the headquarters of the largest department in the U.S. government. Terry Gibson.
It's pretty predictable. It's clear that all of these government agencies at the federal level are continuing to do whatever they can to deny access to the press, to deny access to the public, really, to get real, clear, honest, transparent information about what is going on. And so this seems to be just another logical step. It's just an excuse. This pledge, which is kind of a scary word in itself, the way it's being used, is an excuse to be able to say, well, we're going to take your press privileges away because you violated the pledge. And whether, again, whether that'll stand up in court or not, whether courts will allow them to get away with that, who knows? But the real problem is that the time it takes to fight that out in court is so lengthy that they could literally ban access to unlimited amounts of press people and go on about business as usual. You know, it also just screams really loudly, what is it you're trying to hide, Pete? What is it you don't want us to see? If we look back at our history of this country, where we see that without having journalists that were really set on doing good, high-quality investigative journalism at the highest levels of government, we would have never really known about what was going on in Vietnam. We would have never really known about what was going on with Watergate. Just two classic examples where the press played the pivotal role in bringing that to the public's attention. And anybody who's worked in government, as I have, knows that the idea of getting the press to run by you whatever they're about to write about you in your organization before they do it is ridiculous.
Yeah, we don't do that.
Laugh at you. Nice try.
And yeah. So it's just ridiculous. It's counter to everything this country is founded on.
Yeah. I think that this is just not how journalism works. You can't say, oh, like, please ask us and we'll tell you what stories to do. Like, no. They do what stories they're, especially unclassified information. Like, how do you even come up with what that is? So I just think that they're blatantly trying to remove people who don't agree with them. It's another attack on free speech. And we can't let any of this stand.
Although I have heard from I've heard from members of the media and then even the national media who have said, look, this is chilling. There's no question about it. This is bad. However, going to a press conference at the Pentagon is not where I'm getting the most of my information. And so take away my press release to walk or my press pass to walk into the Pentagon. I can still put out a story because of the sources that I have that I have gathered. I hope that's true.
Yeah, but, so it's like almost better to be banned, not sign the pledge, and just continue to gather sources
to be
outside.
On the outside as opposed to the inside.
Yeah, because you're only getting the talking points of the Department of War.
But again, the person is still the individual that I'm talking about that I'm quoting is it still said it is chilling and it is awful. Yeah. However, it if they think that it is going to stop the stories that are negative, that probably will not happen. Terry.
Well, this kind of goes back to one of the things I was trying to talk about earlier, in that it's hard to see how banning everything that the Trump organization wants to ban is really possible because of our complex communication network. One of the letter writers did an excellent job of pointing out that Jimmy Kimmel has over 20 million followers on YouTube, which is great. I really appreciate them bringing that to our attention. So what it made me think of was, well, what would stop Jimmy Kimmel, who has just been silenced by the Trump administration, although, you know, voluntarily by his corporation, not by any legal means, but what would stop Jimmy Kimmel from just starting his own YouTube channel completely separate from the corporate media and beginning to do what he does, which is criticize the president. What would stop him from doing that?
Totally.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, oh, I don't want to misattribute this, but there was a comedian that I saw online. I almost want to say it was Larry David, but it may not have been, said, just because you don't, if you shut down every late night show, it doesn't mean people are going to stop making fun of you.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to continue.
New people will pop up.
Right.
Don't you worry.
They'll find other places. Like, it's not just late night. Like, if you took everyone off the air, there's still going to be people making fun of you.
The content is still there.
Yes.
You are creating it.
It sure is.
Yes, because you're so easy to make fun of.
I know.
You just keep handing it to them on a silver platter, or I guess in Trump's case, a gold platter.
A gold platter, yes. All right. And now one more story before we maybe two, but we'll see how we do here. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes. This story was from Friday and has been lingering over the weekend. I think more information came out as a proclamation was made on Saturday, the clarification of the proclamation. But the president signed an executive order regarding a $100,000 visa fee. And so Wall Street banks, tech companies, big and small, were scrambling Saturday to figure out how their tens of thousands of employees would be affected by President Trump's proclamation imposing a $100,000 fee for visas granted to skilled foreign workers. The change set off immediate confusion over the exact rules and how they would be enforced. Shortly after Mr. Trump signed the proclamation on Friday, employees at Microsoft, Amazon, and J.P. Morgan received notices advising those with H-1B visas who were outside the United States to return before the new rules take effect at 12:01 Eastern Time on Sunday, so yesterday. The Trump administration sought to address the confusion on Saturday by saying that the fee would only apply to new applicants and renewals or current visa holders would not be affected. In a post on social media, the White House said the change would not impact the ability of any current visa holder to travel to and from the United States. But that left many executives, general counsels, and human resources departments, as well as their immigration lawyers, saying they were coming down on the side of caution this weekend. Several companies and attorneys had already urged workers to return to the United States as soon as possible. Many kept their eyes glued on the White House social media accounts for any pertinent clarification. We acknowledge that this is an uncertain time for our people on visas and your families, said Jacqueline Arthur, head of human capital management at Goldman Sachs, written in a memo on Saturday to employees. The memo said that Goldman was working with its lawyers to review the specifics of the order as more details become available to communicate with you accordingly. Meanwhile, Bernard Mueller, co-chair of the immigration practice group at Ogletree Deacons, said he had been flooded with calls from executives and corporate board members about the new rule and how to communicate with employees about them. There's a lot of question marks all over this, he said early Saturday. We are still flying in somewhat foggy conditions. Late Saturday, the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services issued a memo underscoring that Mr. Trump's proclamation be applied prospectively to petitions that have not yet been filed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is just another way that he is kind of trying to block immigration. And it's hard to understand how the stock market is still at record highs when there's so much uncertainty with tariffs. There's so much uncertainty now with how people will staff their businesses. You know, people depend on immigration for workforce. And I mean, I'm glad it's only for new applicants, but this is going to essentially stop the influx of people coming to work in the United States from other countries. And I don't think that that is going to be good for our economy.
Terry.
Well, so first you cut off funding to a vast majority of scientific research that's going on around this country, and you encourage those scientists to seek funding from other countries and to relocate to other countries that want to be a part of creating new science and discoveries. Then you pass this declaration, which would severely limit especially those in the science and technology field from either coming over here or going over there. In other words, it's almost like he's sitting there thinking, what else can I do to put us at a competitive disadvantage so that we become weaker and weaker and weaker every day that I'm in office? Yeah. Because that's exactly what's happening. These other countries are looking at us and saying, this is ridiculous. They're just making it easier for us to recruit all the talent that had always wanted to go to the United States, but now they can't afford it. So we're going to offer up these opportunities and we're going to add like some perks and just make it really attractive. To the point of the stock market, it makes no financial sense how these companies are not speaking out and using their bully pulpit and their leverage to say enough, quit attacking our economy. We need these talented people that come from other countries to help us do what we do. Otherwise, we cannot compete. It is mind-boggling.
I thought one of the interesting sidebars to this was that you have the White House trying to clean it up and say, no, we need prospective people. And meanwhile, the lawyers of the companies are saying, well, we're going to exercise on the side of caution. We're not going to go. We're not going to go too far into this before we realize what's going to happen.
You could change your mind tomorrow.
Right. Well, that's it. You know, it seems like we've played this game before, and it's not going to be beneficial to us. So we're just going to. And so by doing that, I mean, it obviously serves the same purpose ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Please don't give us your best and brightest. We don't want any of them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, we're out of time. I want to thank the two brave souls who came in here to be our panelists this morning. Just wonderful to have both Anna Markowitz and Terry Gibson with us. And I thank them so much for taking the time and for being so nice and accommodating. Have a wonderful week. Thank you so much.
You too. Enjoy the rain.
Be well. Yeah. Thank you, Terry. Take care of yourself. We'll be back with more and talk to Paul Grondahl of the Albany Book Festival coming up next on WAMC.